This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Extreme heat, flooding, and worsened air quality will be the most deadly and costly effects of climate change. That's according to the National Climate Assessment. And these impacts will not affect neighborhoods equally. Factors such as fewer trees, green spaces, and far more heat-retaining surfaces cause higher temperatures. Little greenery and a high number of impervious surfaces create a hotter area and less space for rain to infiltrate naturally. Neighborhoods like these have fewer resources to bounce back from the damaging effects of heat and flooding. Now, a group called Groundwork is partnering with the City of Cincinnati's Office of Environment and Sustainability to work directly with neighborhoods to equitably plan for Cincinnati's green future. And let's talk about that and a recent mapping project to identify the hottest places in Cincinnati. We're joined today by the City of Cincinnati's Office of Environment and Sustainability Climate and Community Resilience Analyst, Savannah Sullivan. Savannah, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you again, hear you again.
Either way, you're on the Zoom call, so there's a little bit of visual involved these days. We also have with us Groundwork Ohio River Valley Co-Executive Director, Tanner Yes. Tanner, welcome to our show.
Hi, Michael. Thank you.
Our pleasure. And also joining us is Portland State University Professor of Urban Studies and Planning and Sustaining Urban Places Research Lab founder, Vivek Chandas. Dr. Chandas is also the co-author on a study looking at the effects of historical housing policies on urban heat exposure. Dr. Chandas, welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me.
We're glad that you could join us as well. And Savannah, let's start with you on this. We had you on earlier in the summer to talk about something else, but related, and we teased ahead that this was coming and promised to have you back. Now you're back. This was August 11th that some data was collected across Cincinnati, the heat campaign date, as you call it, August 11th. I'm looking at the historic calendar weather-wise, and it really wasn't that hot a day compared to some August days we have. It looks like our high that day was 82. But with your volunteers, what did you find across the city on August 11th?
Yeah, so we did this heat campaign through a community science campaign through NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and pulled together 17 volunteers, local volunteers, to make that happen, to collect the data points to support this new heat map that we'll be releasing later this month. And what we were able to identify in that campaign, while it wasn't the hottest day we had all summer, it was a great day in terms of cloud cover. We went across the region. It was not only the City of Cincinnati, but we included four additional jurisdictions, including Elmwood Place, Norwood, St. Bernard, and Lincoln Heights. And what we saw was a max temperature of around 90 across that region in a temperature differential of around 11 degrees. And with this information, and we collected over 80,000 data points with our volunteers, we were able to identify and use a model through NOAA's heat campaign and an implementation partner called CACA Strategies to identify the urban heat islands. And we had a really successful campaign. Not only did we have 80,000 data points, but it was a clear day, so we got to see the temperature changes across the region.
I'm looking at some of the areas that you classify as the hottest spots in the region that you analyzed, and they seem to be diverse in their makeup, their infrastructure, their environment. What were the similarities that you found in places like Arlington Heights, Camp Washington, Over the Rhine, Roselawn, that landed them on the list of the hottest spots?
So our campaign, we collected data at three different times in the day, 6 a.m., 3 p.m., and 7 p.m. And over the course of the day, we saw some neighborhoods were hotter earlier in the day versus later in the evening. And what that looks like, so for example, in the morning, what we saw is that the basin and kind of the Mill Creek Corridor, downtown, you know, Central Business District, those areas retain heat overnight, and that probably has a lot to do with the types of buildings downtown, taller buildings, more concrete, retaining heat overnight. And then later on in the evening, we see other parts of the city and region heating up more quickly. So moving up towards, you know, Norwood, Lincoln Heights, you know, several different neighborhoods had pockets of heat, including Camp Washington, Carthage, Hartwell, Lower Price Hill. And these neighborhoods, they have, you know, bigger plots of exposed land, concrete, asphalt, parking lots, industrial spaces, and those heat up very quickly. And so interventions such as canopy is more needed in those areas, as well as reducing the type of, like, the dark parking lots and reducing the albedo.
So according to the data that was collected, the hottest spots in the region, Arlington Heights, Camp Washington, Carthage, the Central Business District downtown, Edgemont, Elmwood Place, Hartwell, Millvale, Lincoln Heights, Lachlan, Lower Price Hill, Paddock Hills, Pendleton, Over the Rhine, Roselawn, South Cumminsville, St. Bernard, Walnut Hills, and Winton Place. And I realize as I'm reading those that those are in alphabetical order. And then they found pockets of heat in Clifton, Clifton Heights, Coryville, Oakley, and Northside. I want to bring into our conversation now Vivek Chandas. He's from Portland State University, where he is a professor, and he is also with the Planning and Sustaining Urban Places Research Lab, where he's a founder, and conducted some research with two others, the effects of historical housing policies on resident exposure to intra-urban heat, a study of 108 U.S. urban areas. Vivek, what have you found in this? Because I'm just grabbing some highlights of your research here that indicates no other category of hazardous weather event in the United States has caused more fatalities over the last few decades than extreme heat. And then you talk about or discover that urban landscapes amplify extreme heat due to the imbalance of low-slung built surfaces to natural non-human manufactured landscapes. And then that emerging research suggests that many of the hottest urban areas also tend to be inhabited by resource-limited residents and communities of color. Can you expand on that for us?
Sure. Thanks. This is you got right to the heart of this study, and it really ties into what Savannah was describing in terms of the reason we wanted to engage City of Cincinnati partners like Groundwork and other volunteers, in part because we've been doing these campaigns around the country for almost a decade now, finding ways to refine our methods. And what we're finding is a systematic pattern across the majority of the cities where we've done these campaigns, where we were seeing the hottest places, also containing some of the buildings that you're describing, these low-hung buildings, these low-slung buildings, these very wide asphalt or concrete parking lots. And we were asking ourselves, like, what is the pattern here? Is it just that wealthier communities are, and we asked several people, is it just that wealthier communities are able to have more money so they can buy more trees and do more greening and kind of use this kind of luxury effect of what we're noticing, or is it something else? And so what we did was dig into this data set that the University of Richmond had dropped back a couple of years ago, and they had digitized what are called essentially redlining maps for areas around the country. And what those essentially describe are four different, quote, types or grades of neighborhoods where the Homeowners Loan Corporation had one set of neighborhoods that they considered best, and those were called A neighborhoods. And then they had B, which were still desirable, C that were declining, and D that were called, quote, hazardous. And the D neighborhoods didn't receive a lot of or any mortgage support. People who wanted to buy homes in those neighborhoods didn't receive mortgage. There was often lesser desirable land uses like industry or big box stores or anything that the wealthier, often whiter neighborhoods didn't have, were often put to adjacent to these, quote, D or hazardous neighborhoods, as they were called. And so what we notice is that those are the neighborhoods that are also very consistently hot. And those are where a lot of the public housing projects of the 20th century went. Those are where the, again, freeways, when the federal administration was putting in freeways all through the 50s, that's where the freeways often went through because they were the lowest cost land. And so we saw this pattern across almost every one of the cities that we studied across the country. And it's enough for us to suggest that there's a pretty systematic pattern that started almost a century ago that we're seeing the pernicious effects of heat today. And if we are going to see hotter summers, more intense heat waves, then this really is a call to action for communities to really start preparing for some of the hotter and more long-term heat waves that I know Cincinnati and many other cities in the region are going to face.
But Dr. Chandas, you just noted that a lot of these neighborhoods were impacted by the freeway system, particularly in the 1950s, when major roadways across the U.S. and were installed and redlined neighborhoods were divided by these infrastructure projects. What type of impact do these large roadways have in the temperature of an immediate area around it?
Right. So when you think about a roadway, I mean, what we've decided to make roads with are very dark, very dense materials. And so when it comes to what attracts the solar radiation and what really holds on to it, it's those dense, very dark materials. Just like if you were wearing a darker shirt on a day, you feel a little bit warmer than a lighter shirt. And so just like that, when we build our cities and all of our neighborhoods, we're using different materials. And often those neighborhoods that were built with low quality materials or really dense materials that are easy to throw up, throw down onto the landscape, we can start to see that they absorb, like what Savannah was describing in downtown, there's a lot of infrastructure there that absorbs heat throughout the day, holds on to it. So when we go by there in the morning, we actually pick up on that, what's called long wave radiation coming off of the surfaces. And so what we end up seeing is a freeway going down is often so large and such a massive amount of infrastructure that it really absorbs that heat and holds on to that throughout the day, throughout the night. And then as the sun comes up the next day, it reheats up. So then on top of that, with the cars and all the friction that's going on the freeways almost act as if they're kind of a heater in the neighborhood where they're pushing all that heat onto adjacent residences. And so that's where living adjacent to a freeway on really hot days, you can actually, it's palpable. You can feel it as you walk by or walk alongside a freeway.
That's Dr. Vivek Chandas. He is a professor of urban studies and planning at Portland State University. You heard previously from Savannah Sullivan. She is a sustainability, climate, and community resilience analyst at the City of Cincinnati. We're also joined via Zoom by Groundwork Ohio River Valley co-executive director Tanner Yes. And Tanner, talk a little bit about the Climate Safe Neighborhoods Initiative and what your goals are as you embark upon this here in Cincinnati.
Great. Thank you, Michael. It's really awesome to be here with you and Vivek and Savannah. So Climate Safe Neighborhoods is a nationwide partnership led by Groundwork USA. It's funded by the Kresge Foundation and the JPB Foundation. It's in partnership with the City of Cincinnati, and it's putting us on the map in an effort to better bake in engagement of residents when it comes to resiliency and adapting to a future with a changing climate. So as that relates to Groundwork Ohio River Valley, simply put, Groundwork is where justice and the environment meet. We're the only nonprofit in the area, an environmental nonprofit in the area with leadership of color at all levels of staff and board. We have shared experiences with the people that we serve, and we come from some of the same neighborhoods. So how do we connect environment and sustainability and all these things that we're talking about to quality of life? Groundwork is the city's largest youth and young adult employer, focusing on green jobs and environmental justice. We work with communities to elevate their voices and knowledge, providing technical support and fundraising. We connect things like education and income to real life pathways. So not just jargon about sustainability, et cetera. People on the ground, they know if their neighborhood is hotter. They know if their asthma rates are really high. They know what's going on in their neighborhoods because they're experts in their neighborhoods. So much of what we do at Groundwork is unearthing the potential that's all around us in areas and neighborhoods left behind by the environmental movement. So Climate Safe Neighborhoods is a perfect example of that. And we're so thankful to be partnered with Savannah in the Office of Environmental Sustainability at the city.
And Tanner, I'm looking at a couple of maps that were provided and some of the research that's already been conducted. And I'm not as knowledgeable in this field as my guests today, but I'm looking at this and you see the hot spots mapped out where they're 10 to 25 degrees above the mean. And then you have other areas in blue that are 10 to 25 degrees below the mean. And it looks to me that the overlap is there are a lot of trees where the blue, the cooler parts of town are compared to the red areas. So what role will greening the city play in addressing this?
Right. Let's talk a little bit more about these areas, right? Savannah named a list of neighborhoods. A lot of them are either highly urbanized or they're low income and or minority neighborhoods. So this is an old story, right? We're looking at it from a climate lens right now, but the symptoms, they're nothing new. And they can be traced back almost always to race's policies around housing, zoning, a lot of the good work that Dr. Shandis has uncovered. And they're disproportionately affecting our Black and brown communities, again, and or low income. So we don't have a redlining map, or at least we can't find a redlining map for Cincinnati mysteriously. But part of the climate safe neighborhoods is to look at what's already there. You know, we know where places are hotter. We know where flooding hazards are, maybe impervious surfaces, fewer trees, kind of educate ourselves, elevate our local and resident voices, and create advocates that know what's going on and can speak the language of policymakers, decision makers at city, county, whatever levels, so that we can advocate for climate mitigation strategies.
Savannah, what comes next with policymakers at City Hall, for example, based on what's collected here?
Yeah. So we're very excited and fortunate to be working alongside Groundwork Ohio River Valley with Tanner, Sophie Revis, and their whole team to move the exact type of work Tanner just described forward. We received earlier this year a National League of Cities 2020 Leadership and Community Resilience Program grant to strengthen the equity and inclusion component of the Green Cincinnati Plan. And we're really looking forward to partnering with Groundwork in order to do that, to work directly with neighborhoods to elevate their lived experience and their expertise on these climate impacts to inform what is the next iteration of our plan and create pathways and co-create recommendations with these neighborhoods and residents so that the 2023 Green Cincinnati Plan prioritizes equity as it should be, not only with respect to urban heat, which this map does display disparities across our communities, but also the other climate impacts that we know communities will be facing, whether it's flooding or different elements of climate. And so we will be moving forward with Groundwork in the coming months through a pilot program with the National League of Cities support to basically host an equity advisory group and make sure that we attend to the important equitable process element of what climate planning should be.
Dr. Shandis, I've got about 30 seconds left for you. In your field of work, are you finding more and more large American cities like Cincinnati coming to grips with both the racist past and addressing the climate future?
I would like to think so. I mean, part of what this is really about is acknowledging and recognizing that there has been a number of very systematic policies and programs that are set in place that really don't create an even playing field for everybody trying to pursue the American dream, trying to access jobs, trying to access housing. And what we've done is created a very uneven playing field. And what we're able to show, at least with some of our studies, is that climate change can amplify some of those challenges for communities that have been historically disinvested in. And so what we want to do is have that acknowledgement, have that recognition, and then what we can do is start having the real healing and important conversations about how do we center communities that are experiencing some of these really intense impacts from climate change. And so I do see this actually bringing a lot of that to the front and across the country. It's something that I'm really hopeful for.
We've got a link to Dr. Shandis' study at wvxu.org. Dr. Vivek Shandis, Tanner Yes, and Savannah Sullivan, thanks to all of you for being with us. Really appreciate it. And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at wvxu.org. I'm Michael Monks.